Fall calls for comfort. Mack Weldon's got essentials designed for cool days and timeless style. Their new Ace line combines comfort with sophisticated looks. Go to MackWeldon.com for 20% off your first order of $125 or more with code MACK25.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got all the essentials for comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style you can count on. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and effortless looks. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25.
Dr. Josh Landa, thank you so much for being on the Prep Zone podcast.
It's my pleasure. Happy to be here.
Yeah, listen, we're so honored to have you. I think by far you were the most accomplished guest I've ever had, so I'm really honored.
Well, you must be a young podcast.
Yeah, listen, we haven't been doing this for a long time, yeah. But we're really privileged to have you. I want to just introduce you a little bit to the audience. I think you're well known for everyone, but you know, you're an exercise scientist with a master's degree in exercise science and nutrition, while also maintaining certification as a professional strength and conditioning specialist through the National Strength and Conditioning Association. You're also a double board certified chiropractic physician with a specialty in neurology. You've been in a private practice in rehabilitation care in Westport for 24 years.
That's right.
You're a professor of neuroscience in the Department of Physical Therapy and Human Movement Science at Sacred Heart.
That's a lot of words, yeah.
Love Sacred Heart. Yeah, I'm going through these. I'm trying to be as good as I can with some of these words. You're also you're a section editor of the Neurologic, and you're going to have to help me with the rest words.
I'm a section editor for an exercise physiology journal for the neurological disease.
Yeah. I mean that's and you are like a lifelong athlete. You're a two-time All-American boxer, which like is incredible.
Yeah, that seems eons ago. Yes,
but it's like and I know you're a triathlete as well. I did my first triathlon. The mini one.
Oh, that's the best.
Right. Yeah. It's like
that's a perfect family event.
It is. Yeah. And before we get into what we're going to talk today, I want to talk a little bit about that because I covered that event as Prep Zone a year ago.
Yes.
And I remember feeling a very special vibe around that event.
Uh-huh.
Not only by the athletes, but all they do with the special needs people and all that. It was like,
the team triumph.
Yeah. It's insane, right? Yeah. And then I'm actually wearing their shirt underneath this one. And what happened was I covered that event. And then I said, you know what? Next year, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
I decided when I was there, right?
And that's how it works. You get inspired, you get motivated when you're in the culture. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what I decided, then I stopped. Like, you know, because somewhere on the way, like sometimes we do that. And then my wife came to me and she said, wait a minute. Weren't you saying you want to do this?
Yeah.
I'll help you. And we started doing spinning classes together. And it's like, that was the motivation I needed from her to do it.
Beautiful.
You know, because sometimes
we all need a partner.
Right.
We all need a motivating, somebody that pushes us.
Right. Because we're in this, like, you know, we're humans. We're not meant to do life alone.
Yeah. That's well said.
Right. I mean, it's like,
that's also, you know, the Westport, triathlon, it's a, you know, mini sprint, we call it. That is a perfect segue intro into the racing, lifestyle or whatever, however you want to say. But, that's a great day. I've done that. I volunteered for that years ago.
It's awesome.
It's a great day. It's a good family community type atmosphere. So I'm glad you did that. That's great.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Like, and I said, the best thing I like about the whole thing is that it doesn't really matter what time you finish, as long as you finish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Of course.
You're
a completer, not a competer.
That's right. Yeah. And what was interesting is I was talking to a buddy of mine and I said, you know, I don't know, like I was, you know, level hour 15, whatever. And he goes, let me tell you something. He goes, you signed up. You already beat so many people that don't have the courage even to sign up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How many triathlons have you done? Talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah, I don't do them any longer. I did I was pretty competitive for about 5 years. So I haven't really done one since right after COVID. So between like 2014 and 2020, that was like competition time.
What was the longest you've ever did?
The longest, I never did full, so at the 70.3, the half. My favorite race by far I've done it three times. My favorite race by far is Escape from Alcatraz. So that is a well-run, organized race. It's an iconic type of experience.
Can you imagine
swimming in the bay and you know, like the
So walk us through what is that like? Where's the running? Where's the swimming? Where's the biking? What is that?
It's an odd distance because doesn't really fit any standard format for triathlon. It's a unique kind of animal all in itself. So it's a 1.5 mile swim. They drop you, jump off the boat, you know, near Alcatraz Island.
That's awesome.
Swim back to shore, and then it's a 18 mile bike through San Francisco, which is, you know, just beautiful. It's an amazing, the aesthetic, the course is beautiful along the Great Highway, et cetera, and hilly, obviously.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That was my next question.
The run is probably difficult. It's an 8 mile run, again up hilly, and then you run partly on the beach. It's just a fabulous, fabulous experience, life experience.
Awesome.
Yeah, and it's tough to get in. So a lot of people, it's kind of a bucket list race for a lot of people, a lot of triathletes. So that was, you know, that's kind of the highlight, and it's a just very, very enjoyable, you know, life experience.
Well, let's do this. I am going to look that up.
Yeah.
And let's just say how long it'll. Listen, I know it's a long way. It's a long way for me, but let's like.
They have it every year in. I think it's in the beginning of June.
Okay.
So,
and it's, I'm sure the weather is beautiful in San Francisco at that point.
It's a little variable. Sometimes it can be a little chilly.
Really?
It can be as low as in the 50s, or I lucked out when I did it, it was in the high 60s.
Oh, that's not
70s.
Bad. Yeah.
But the water is, luckily I could train here in May. Jumping in the Sound in May here is about the same there. It's about 52 to 55 degrees.
Oh.
So you get used to it.
Yeah. Well, the Westport one, the water was 72 degrees. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was raining. It was miserable, but in the water it was nice.
It was raining this year. Right?
Yeah, it was raining. It's like I was actually a lot warmer in the water. Yeah. And then I got out, I'm like, oh, this is not, you know, and it was great.
Well, that's endurance racing. You have to adapt to the elements.
I know. That's one of the guys that I was talking to, he goes, listen, the elements are the element. You got to beat the elements. Every elements.
Yeah.
So I want to get into it. Again, thank you so much for being here.
You know, I'm happy to help. To educate.
I think that what we want to talk today a little bit about is sports specialization. We talked about that, and I know you're very diversified in the event. Since I've started Prep Zone, you know, I've been covering all these different types of athletes, right, in different sports. Like I said, we met at a wrestling event. Remember that? Oh, the first time we met.
Yes.
Yeah, I came to cover your sons.
My son wrestles. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
So it's like. And I love that. And what I love the most is when I saw athletes doing multiple sports. I'd cover them in one sport. And I come, I was like, that's great.
And you're
because
covering the same athlete, yeah.
Right, because what I thought is that this is someone that maybe dominates in one sport and doesn't in the other. But at the same time, he's going out there and trying something different, right, and experience himself. But talk to a little bit about what is sports specialization?
Okay. It's a relatively new phenomenon the last maybe 15, maybe 20 years, but 10, 15 years, definitely. So I'm Gen X. I believe we're dead center Gen X, right? I'm 52. When I grew up in playing athletics, so I only played two high school sports. Because when we grew up, if you didn't play three sports, you weren't really considered a major, major athlete, right? So I didn't play a fall sport, and I felt a little deficit there, right? And obviously things have changed over time. So sports specialization, really there's really no one consensus, but the best definition now is an athlete who plays one sport more than 8 months a year. Okay. More specifically to that is early sports specialization, which is really where we're going to talk about the caveats. Early sports specialization is a cutoff about 14 to 15 years old, playing one sport more than 8 months a year.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Okay. I mean, so I'm playing a single sport more than 8 months out of the year.
And so you mentioned 14, 15 years old. And I know we have some talking points, but I just have to stop right there and think about, isn't that a little early for someone to just realize this is the only thing I'm doing?
Yes, that's the point of early sports specialization is before 14, before 15, depending on the maturity of the child, of the student athlete. So if we're have a 12-year-old student athlete participating in one sport for more than 8 months out of the year, that's considered early sports specialization.
But what is driving that? What is walk us through a little bit of what you, in your thoughts, things are driving that.
Just like in medicine and health, there's really almost never one cause, right? Mm. So we can look at a multitude of factors. If we're really being honest, which we should be, I think the overarching umbrella here is the cost of college. Okay, so the cost of college and the competition for matriculation is, I believe, the ultimate driving force. Because if that weren't the case, then we wouldn't be trying to, parents, coaches, students wouldn't be trying to subsidize college with athletics. So I think that is the primary reason. There's other reasons that are underneath that, parental pressures, coaches' pressures, privatization of sport, right? So sport has become a business at the high school and even the lower collegiate level. We all know that the elite college level, it's already been a business for a very long time.
Now it's just official.
And that's fine. I'm not disparaging that at all. And this is capitalist society and that's the way it is. But it's trickling down further and further and further. So we see these pressures on student athletes. And I believe that there's another factor that hasn't really been talked about as much. That's kind of this insidious factor. And that's the concept of this ultra individualization, branding, identity type of culture that has developed. Maybe it's from the social media or other factors. But if we see, obviously, professional athletes branding themselves, even social media influencers branding themselves. So I think there's this branding culture that has developed over the past years, and that's trickled into youth and having athletes or students say, okay, what is my identity? I am a tennis player. I am a wrestler. I want to be a football player, right? And that becomes part of their identity rather than I'm an athlete. And this is what I do. I can play multiple sports. I may have one dominant sport, but I think that there's been this this almost fear of I really need to excel at one thing or one sport, even though I maybe have other talents. This is where I want to put all my eggs in this basket because this is going to be the best avenue for me to try to get to college.
I mean, there's so much to digest on that, those statements alone. Let's start with the college. I'm speaking from personal experience. I've had two kids go through Staples, right, which is our main audience here. Both of them were just playing. And again, it's interesting because I talk about this stuff and people think that, you know, I was a parent. Like, I am a parent now, but I was a parent of a high school, middle school. And both my boys were kind of only played one sport, right? I mean, the younger one kind of switched from soccer to volleyball, like at mid-high school. Mm-hmm. But the older one playing soccer throughout and only did soccer. And let's start about physically first. Mm-hmm. What is playing just one sport does physically to someone, to an athlete?
Yeah. Well, first of all, congrats for, you know, parenting a child through high school and getting them to college, because that is an achievement, right?
So appreciate that.
I don't want
to,
know you as well. We're going to talk about a lot of things here.
Right.
And the one thing I definitely don't want it to get to come across in any way is that, disparaging or judging parents or students, because raising kids is difficult. Raising kids in this current culture is difficult. Putting three kids through school, through college, especially multiple kids, is difficult and challenging, right? So we're not questioning that. We're not questioning people's, motivations to try to achieve in their life. But there are trade-offs that come with that. So we just want people to be informed. I want parents to be informed. Part of my 25 years in practice is education. Most of it is trying to educate people. Okay, so that's what this is about, right? Once we have education and we're informed, then we can make decisions, right? But as long as you have the information beforehand, that's my purpose, right? We want people to have as much information as they can to make the informed decision for you and your family, right? So that's what this is about. That being said, what was the question?
Well, yeah, no, I asked physically, right? Because physically, it's risks. Like you. We talk about we talk about sportsization, and so someone, a student athlete. Because what struck me when you said 14 years old.
Yep.
This is someone whose body is not even formed yet.
Yes.
So talk about the effects of just doing one thing with your body.
When I speak on a 14, that's where most of the data, right? And the data is very strong on this. There's really no refuting the risk of early sports specialization, okay, as far as the physical risks. So the physical risks for, let's say, the average mature level of 14-year-old. And some 14-year-olds may be more, some may be less. And I think that's, we can talk about the difficulty that coaches have in their training and in their protocols, because they have different kids of different maturity levels. That's all another issue. So the physical risks, we know that early sports specialization under 14 years old, the injury risks are not really debatable. There's about a two times increase in injury risk and rate for early sports specialization. And that is what we call dose dependent, which means if you increase the amount of hours, you increase the number of injury and the severity of injury. So that's two times during adolescence, during that time, you about to have double the risk of injury. What comes along with that, of course, and nobody wants this, is increased missed time from the sport, right? And I deal with that on a daily basis. And then we get into the pressures of when can they play again, right? And we have a 12-year-old who's playing on a weekend tournament in the middle of, September, and, when can we play again? Well, it's not that important. It's not their last game of their senior year, which is where we want to have a little bit more pressure, right? So we have to kind of temper that motivation to get them back. So the injury risk there. So it's dose dependent. So the cutoff that the data is growing with this concept or this topic. The cutoff about 16 hours a week for that sport, right? So if we see a cutoff of 16 hours a week for that sport, anything above that, we usually see a dose dependent increase in risk for injury. If we get up into the 20s, 20 hours, 23 hours a week, which is a lot, the risk exponentially increases. Now we get to 4 to 7 times increased risk of injury and triple the time lost. Okay. This data comes from current during that time, but also there was a study at a UCLA a few years ago where they studied NCAA athletes. So athletes that have already been, they've already graduated, they're in college, and they surveyed the athlete's injury time, injury rate, time missed.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
College between those that specialized and those that did not specialize or were multi-sport athletes. So I'll say that again. So they surveyed and examined all athletes, of athletes that specialized in high school and junior high, and those that didn't specialize. And we saw the same pattern. The the college athletes were more injured. They had a higher rate of injury, almost double the ones that specialized.
And that's alarming, right? Because we just talked about, you know, I'm just talking, but in my mind is like, if I, and again, I'm coming from a parent angle, right? And mm-hmm. again, sure. I went through this and I'm thinking, if my kid is on whatever, is on the lacrosse field or the football field, you know, every day or you know, the entire year, doesn't he have a better chance of getting that college scholarship that everyone is dreaming about than someone who's only on it like maybe for a little season?
Right.
How do you fight that battle?
You would think so, but the actual data doesn't show a great difference. I look at it like this. So let's take, I hear oftentimes, and most experts, I would say all experts that I've seen in the sports science field, in the medicine field, in the pediatrics, recommend against early sports specialization. That's the real issue. The issue isn't this the junior or the senior that decides to specialize. The issue is the junior high and even into elementary school. But so sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth grade. That's where we see the biggest risk. Does the specialized athlete have an advantage to get the scholarship or recruited? Mildly. Like, again, that same UCLA study showed that there may be a 10% difference, right? Mm. We're talking about low numbers anyway. Only 5 to 7% of all high school athletes go on to play in college.
Right. Right? It's very low.
Half of that get scholarships, okay? And then you break it down into sports, right? So we live in an area where lacrosse is dominant. Dominant sport here in this area is lacrosse. Lacrosse has the highest percentage, well, second highest percentage of student athletes playing in college from high school. It's about 14%, both men and women, boys and girls, right? Because there's not a lot of programs. So it's Mid-Atlantic, it's New England, a little bit in the Midwest now. It's growing. The highest is women's hockey.
Really?
Yeah, because there's not a lot of programs.
Right, yeah,
so
right,
if you play high school women's hockey, girls hockey, you're about 30 to 40% are going to play in college.
How about that? If you listen here, that's where to go.
Yeah, the lowest is, I mean, men's basketball is remote, like 2%, like wrestling, okay? Very low. Tennis, very low. So the advantages, perceived advantages, not as great as we think they are, but there is some benefit to some specialization to get recruited, but we have to trade off, right? We know that there's an increased risk in injury, right? Which can turn into missed time, which can also turn into lifelong issues, which we can talk about, right? Lifelong injury, right?
Yeah.
Disabilities and things like this. And I've seen that, okay? Then trade that off with the small increase in chance of getting a scholarship and getting recruited. The way I look at it is you already know who these kids are at 10, 12 years old. They're better than everybody. And a lot of experts and sports scientists, and I was going to say and people in exercise and sports science, they like to use the argument to promote multi-sport participation, what we're talking about, by using pro athletes as examples, because many pro athletes were multi-sport athletes. They were not specialized. But the problem with that argument is most pro athletes are elite at everything. They are just good athletes.
Yeah.
They could do anything. You throw a gifted person a ball, any ball, and they will likely do well. They can run, they can jump, they can make decisions quickly. There's just something gifted about them, right?
Yeah.
I don't think many, in my opinion, I don't think a lot of lay people or casual sports fans understand how good professional athletes are at their craft. It is exponentially better than most people on earth. And that's why they are where they are.
Yeah, it's like, I guess, because like I've been asked maybe three times, like, who's the best athlete that you've covered, right? Because I've now, you know, for 3 years, so like I'm on the program. And my only answer is this. I said, when I see a good athlete, I know right away because they're better than everybody else in the field. And it's just not, and better, I don't mean better like as a person, just they're gifted. They're gifted, right? They're gifted. Now,
can I just go. So the argument, so I never really like that argument. Because for me, the real issue isn't with whether a person's going to be a professional athlete or even a high Division I athlete, because we kind of already know who these kids are, right? Because it's just, you know, like Malcolm Gladwell wrote Blink, right? You just know it when you see it, right? There's just this expression that you can, or this je ne sais quoi that you see, yeah. right? In my experience, practicing here, taking care of families, taking care of athletes, taking care of people in the community, the issue is with the kid, the student athlete that is just good enough. They're above average. They're good athletes. They're not great, but they're trying in getting to a Division III academically strong school. That's where I see the most of the pressure to try to separate themselves competitively to get into an academically strong school, Division III, even though that Division IIIs aren't really supposed to quote unquote give scholarships. We know that there's ways to work around that. That's where I see a lot of the ultra pressures, the ultra specialization, the coaching pressures for those students, the real student athlete, the field hockey player from Bates, right? The swimmer from Colby or whatever, right. Whatever it is, right? That is what, in my opinion, where a lot of these issues where we have to make make trade-off decisions. So that's my opinion.
Yeah, and here's one thing, and I don't expect you to have an answer for this, but I want to ask it because I think it's, in my mind, as you were talking about it, this thought couldn't get out. If you ask most people if they would trade maybe 5 years of their healthy life to play a college sport, they would do it.
They would do it. Can't argue that.
Right? I mean, think about it. Like, well, yeah, let's say you're going to, like, the last 5 years of life, you won't be able to bend down to pick something mm-hmm. up. But if you do this rest of your life, you know, for the next, whatever, you specialize this age, you're going to play in college.
I don't disagree. Listen, I was a boxer, right? I was getting hit in the head. I teach neurology now. Like, obviously, that doesn't mix, right? So I get it. I was an athlete, right? I was a boxer and a triathlete. Those are, you know, no, humbly speaking, those are the two most grueling sports.
Exactly.
That
exists, yeah.
Right? So I get it, but again, we're not there. There's, I think there's intelligent ways to solve.
Talk about that, because the thing is, a lot of times we present a problem, and I'm not expecting us to come up with a solution,
right?
But you are an extremely accomplished, you know, doctor. You treat people. What is, let's start with this. So the advice of sports specialization, and talk a little bit about that, expand on that, give us some guidance. And I know it's not a final answer, but your professional opinion.
I think we've passed a tipping point. I think it is the way the culture is the way it's going to be now, because there's too much temptation. There's too much money involved. There's too much pressures for college. And like we talked about, what I think some of the solutions are is to understand the super early, right? The under 14 kind of 30, because we don't see, in my opinion, we don't see enough of a difference in matriculation to college or scholarship attainment to trade off the risk of injury for physical and mental health. We haven't even talked about mental health.
Yeah, I want to get there.
Okay. Yeah. So in my belief now, and the data supports this, is I don't think there's enough of a increase in likelihood of getting recruited or scholarship by specializing before 14 or 13 that offsets the risk of physical injury. We talking about a mature 15-year-old, and then certainly by junior year. I always say junior year. Now, I know that is difficult because they recruit earlier now. But I think by junior year you decide, okay, this is the path I'm going to take. Then that's what I'm going to do. But before eighth grade, I don't think that's too early, especially if a very immature, you know, that you can take one 13-year-old versus another 13-year-old, and they're two totally different maturity levels.
Boys and girls, two totally different as well.
100%. Yeah. 100%. So I think, that's the early, we really want to educate people on early specialization, right? The culture and the philosophies of getting everybody on board, the coaches, the parents, and the students, I think that's a big ask. I don't think that's necessarily, because again, there's too many private interests now, okay, with these travel leagues and these camps, and there's too much money being made to really, I think, change that now. But one thing, the concept or the attitude of making decisions on fear, I think that is kind of irresponsible. Like, coaches scaring parents or kind of scare students. Like, if you don't show up to this, you know, in, you know, off-season training program, then it's going to hurt your chances next fall. I think that's irresponsible, and I think that's unfair to a student athlete who's multi-talented, who wants to participate in different activities. different sports. We know physically, first of all, participating in sport and physical activity and being active and exercise decreases depression, decreases anxiety, decreases suicidal ideation. This is very well established. But early sports specialization swings it a little bit back the other way, where we see an increase in depression, we see an increase in anxiety, we see an increase in these negative self-talk and pressures and things like this. Okay, so it's tricky.
It is, because, you know, and we're going to talk about mental health, something that's dear and close to my heart in a little bit, but you said something, and I want to just touch on this, because we're, this might be probably one of the most open podcasts I've had, where we're kind of talking some stuff that I know it's not going to be well received by some people, but I'm going to say it, is that it's all well and done. You know, sometimes I'll get coaches that will say, yeah, I'm totally in favor of the multi-sports, the multi this, but that's not what actually happens, right? Mm-hmm. It's a nice thing to say, but then you get the pressure said if you don't come, because it's almost like the athlete knows, right? It's like if everyone on the team is practicing during their entire off season, and you are with a whole different team, with a whole different group, you are missing out. And you talked about social media and the FOMO that we experience, yes, as a society, right? Yes. If I'm not part of this, if I'm not part of that group and all that. Have you, and I want to ask you, and not asking for names, but like, have you ever treated any kids that maybe, like probably you said, that they've expressed how tough this is on them just doing one sport?
I've had multiple experiences taking care of teen athletes, young athletes since, you know, 25 years here. Some anecdotes. See, this is like almost like a little bit of a warning to what could happen. The worst case scenario, of course. And listen, we live in a society where it's polarized, right? You say one thing, and then all of a sudden, that's what you believe, and then everyone is against that. And that's not what this is, right? This is education and trying to speak to what the high probabilities are. There's always exceptions to every rule. There's a child that specialized in sixth grade, never got hurt, never had a problem. That's fine, but that's not the norm, right? So I had just a couple patients that stick out in my memory just right now. Is I took care of a high school basketball player since he was 13, 14 years old, college scholarship, junior year, patellar tendon tears, both, right? One after we fixed one, then the other one happened. I calculated out his senior, before he got injured, you know, he's playing a lot of AAU and a lot of private leagues and things like that. He had played over 100 games in 1 year. And that's, you know, obviously more than the NBA plays, right?
It's crazy.
He played 100 games in 1 year. And when he went to college and he recovered, but he never really played again, right? So that's a little bit of an extreme. There's other, you know, I've taken care of a lot of freshmen, sophomore, juniors that were early specialized. A big common injury is these bony avulsion fractures, right? So it's when the tendon actually pulls the tendon off the bone. So that can happen at the hip, it can happen at the knee, it can happen at the ankle. This is a sign of, you know, musculoskeletal immaturity and overuse, right? And I've seen a number of those cases, particularly in soccer, that we're playing all year round. So it's, again, it's hard being a parent. It's hard trying to get your kids to achieve their dreams and your dreams and have them the best outcome, you know, for them in life, right? So I understand the pressures, but we want to just educate on the early sports specialization.
Yeah, and again, this is, like I said, I'm a parent, right? Yeah. I went through this, so I can speak a lot from my experience and the things that I've been through. And again, just being completely honest, I was probably one of those guys that put some pressure on my kids.
Yep.
You know, to just say, you know, that you have to make that, not they have to, but it's like, it's the expectations.
Sure.
Right? Because it's like, it's the expectation. And I will share with you like how I've changed maybe. It's like, when I was going through this, it's like, maybe making that freshman team or making that JV team, whatever, was like really big, right? Because yes. you kind of won through. And yeah. now it's like you look back on it, like, why?
There was prestige involved with that.
Right, but it's not the kid, it's the parent. And I can say, because yeah. it's we're parents, right? Yeah, so it's like, I'm not expecting you to have an answer, but it's so, like, how?
Well, I look at it like this. So there's generational discussions. Oh, that's the way we used to do it, or we never did it that way. So I think our generation, Gen X, it's funny how our generation, Gen X, we used to, when we were young, we were known as the slackers. But now we're known as like the tough, independent group, right? And so how did us as Gen X, independent and tough, we did everything or we were alone, our parents were never around, and
I just walked to school, yeah.
How did we become the parenting generation that coddled our kids and made everything organized and ultra, right? Ultra organized and ultra structured, and there's no free play anymore, and we just make sure everything is trying to be perfect for them. So there's philosophies on how that happened, is because
I want to hear that, because
the philosophy is that we took that freedom, but we were actually traumatized by having so much freedom that our parents, like I was a parent divorced.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
We were the first generation to go through divorce, right? And Gen X generation was really the first generation to have their parents have a lot of divorce. So there's theories on we're making, you know, as a generation, we're making up for those kind of faults of our parents. So I don't, this is not my expertise, so I don't really want to go too deep on it, but I've read some theories on why this phenomenon has happened. Okay, but leads me to, again, I'm not an expert on that, so I don't really want to go any further with that, but there is a kind of a sentiment of developing resilience versus, trying to develop and have the best opportunities for your child, right? Back to kind of related to that, elite athletes, there's a couple of characteristics of elite athletes that we know about. Okay, that's related. One is that a lot of elite athletes, the characteristics of, they went through some kind of childhood adversity, okay, severe childhood adversity that they had to work through. Okay, too much adversity we know is really poor, develops well, has meant that people have mental health problems as adults, right? But a little bit or just enough creates this positive change where people have to problem solve. Okay, so sports is supposed to develop your resilience, partially. The other characteristic is elite athletes have tremendous positive self-talk. They always think they can do it, right? And we see that with, and there's been studies with that with tennis players, like when they, because tennis, huge mental game, right? Yep. Huge mental focus, but also it's ups and downs. You know, you make a bad shot, you got to go right away. And the elite tennis players of the most, they have positive self-talk. And we see that through other elite athletes as well. Okay, so I just wanted the concept of, you know, raising our kids and not, you know, wanting to have the best for them and making the decisions, we also have to develop, okay, how do we develop their resilience?
Yeah, and it's like, and I know you don't want to go back to it, but like the idea that our generation has become the one to cuddle, because it's like, it is so true.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've even like, I knew it, but like,
it's fascinating.
It never hit me until you just said it, because I remember, so like I grew up in Brazil, right? So it's all the way up to 13 years old, I was living in Petrópolis, a city outside Rio, right outskirts. And I'd wake myself up, I, you know, no breakfast, I just walk, and my parents were awesome, but like, you know, it was normal. You get up, you walk to school on your own, you know, whatever. And it's like, now, like, we get up before our kids, we make breakfast, we make sure they're on the bus. We do all this. And
They don't want to wait more than 2 minutes to pick them up. Or
right. Yeah. They call me.
I waited an hour. No one came pick me up. I just walked home.
No. Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, I'm not judging, because I love what I did, because I felt like I did so much for my kids, right? And 100%. It's funny. I had a conversation with my dad, and my dad goes, he said to me, he said, you were such much better dad than I was.
Yeah.
right? He says that, and it's like, okay, well, yeah and no.
Yes, and, right, 100%. And again,
We're just talking, two guys.
I don't, it, you know, again, parenting is really hard. We're not judging. This is not a judgment. Education, talk. But I had a conversation with, I've had this conversation multiple times with friends, right? Friends that have raised kids and obviously teenage athletes. And same kind of conversation about, oh, this is the way we had it. And we were so tough and independent. But I've had this conversation about my one friend, a couple friends that had kids that weren't performing as well as they wanted them to. And I said, you made their life too easy. They have, you know, the kids well off, successful guys. Their kids have everything they ever wanted at the snap of a thumb, snap of a finger. And I said, you made his life. Your life was nowhere near that easy. And look how hard you had to work to get everything you had. You made your kids' life too easy. And that is an argument. That could be argued. Again, I'm not a psychologist.
Yeah.
But I personally believe that that's true. And that's why we don't see a lot of professional athletes. We see some now professional athletes, their children are also, you know, making it. We see it a little bit more now, but nowhere near the rate that we probably could if their kids were in the same position that they were growing up.
Yeah. And it's crazy, right? Because I don't disagree with you at all.
That doesn't make for a good podcast.
Right. Well, no, but here's the thing. And I'm going to go on the other side of it and say, right. As a parent,
yeah,
it is like it's a thing of a pride to be able to give your kid a better life than you had.
100%. Right. Obviously, yes.
You want to, like,
of course.
Let's just say,
that's what everybody wants.
Right. It's what everybody wants. So it's like we're never going to get an answer on this, but the debate is so amazing because we're not amazing, but it's interesting because at the same point, it's like, okay, should I then, you know, if I'm successful, if I made this, should I not have the nice house that I have? Should I not give my son the car that I can give him because I didn't have it? No, I think that this is just me personally. Like, if you can do it, but am I hurting them in the long run?
I think you balance it out with some other responsibility.
Yeah.
And they have to have skin in the game.
Yeah.
I think in management, it's called participative management. So I think you
like that.
You want to have them. And again, I'm not an expert on this, but I think it's true that if you feel that they have a responsibility for that car or for paying somewhat of it, or even not material things, but just making things not so easy. So they have to, my stepson is like, when we live not too far from Staples, and sometimes it's like, you know, I can't, you gotta walk home, man. Like, you gotta walk home today. And he does it, and he's fine with it. You know, he's a wrestler. He's tough.
I know your kids. They're tough. And it's interesting. Like, we're gonna get into help, but it's like I remember the first time when we met that day at the wrestling, my first ever wrestling meet.
Yeah.
First time. It was so exciting.
It is
like, you know, just a plug here for the wrestling team. Like, if you haven't been to a meet, go.
Yes. Please.
Because it's like, first of all, there's fighting. Right. It's always exciting when there's fighting.
And it's not. It's rough. And
when
kids,
when they're pinning someone, the entire team is sitting right there, like, you know, cheering them on. The crowd is going nuts.
Yeah.
It's like during the winter is one of the things I enjoy the most when I get to go to wrestling because I thought they were so much fun. Yeah.
It's more fun after, obviously, the bigger the crowd.
Right.
So the Chacho meet.
Yeah. I remember I was there last year. It was great. Meets.
Yeah. There's a lot of it's full. But the wrestling meets are underrated. We need to get people to really experience that because, you know, the wrestlers, all athletes work hard. I think, you know, the commitment and the dedication, especially football, lacrosse, you know, all the Staples athletes, really. But, and again, wrestlers, you know, they're cutting weight. They're going to class. They're studying, especially junior year.
Yeah.
Trying to study and cutting weight is not a good mix, right? It's not beneficial for brain health.
Well, you're doing your body, right? It's the toll.
So there's a whole other level there.
Right. Yeah, no, it's like I said, I love it. I go to as many as I can because I think it's really a good, exciting. It's very exciting.
Well, you're like a man about, I don't know how you do, you're everywhere.
Oh,
like,
we try.
You hit it to every event, you're interviewing all the kids. You're amazing. You're everywhere.
I appreciate that. Yeah. One thing that, you know, and people ask me, it's like, I love it. It's like, you know, because it's, you know, these kids out there, and we're talking about this, you know, they're giving so much of their life to that craft, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times this work is going unnoticed. Not with us. Like, I realize, like, and I wish I could interview 20 people per game, right? And get everybody in. And we try to always do alternate. But because it's about the people, it's about the stories, right? I think that that's what's so great,
well
great
said.
About it.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. So let's get back to the topic here of specialization. I want, you touched a little bit on mental health.
Yeah.
And I've had two coaches in here that have talked quite a bit about mental health, which is Manny Jack from football and Jenna Wider from tennis, right? So both of them, kind of like, you know, they dabble. Jenna Wider, doctor, she is a doctor. She's, you know, she does
Right.
And Maddie is getting his. So these are people who are like, you know, kind of navigating that space. But I want to give you like an open forum to talk about sports specialization, mental health, what it does, the dangers. Start us on that subject.
Sure. We know that the data, okay, we know the data for early sports specialization. We know the data increases, there's a risk, increased risk for depression, anxiety, particularly in female athletes, okay, particularly in female athletes, which depression and anxiety kind of run a little bit higher in that population anyway, especially teenage years is not, as you all know, not the easiest years to navigate.
It's not, right.
So the one thing we really want to look for, and it's hard coaching and doing a comprehensive coaching job to kind of navigate and pay attention to all these different things with different kids of different maturity levels, et cetera. Now you want to screen for, look out for kind of mental health issues, right? So the things we look for with mental health are they, first of all, is there a decrease in performance, right? Is there an unlikely or atypical decrease in performance for that student athlete, academically or on the field or in their sport? Do they withdraw, right? Do they have negative self-talk or conflict or combative talk? These are signs of overtraining, but also kind of signs of depression and anxiety. Do they have a change in appetite, right? Change in sleep pattern, right? These are all, again, signs that, okay, something may be slightly off here. So these are just signs for parents and coaches to kind of look for. Moodiness, which is, you know, anything out of the ordinary, atypical for that teenager, right? These are the things. So, mental health, as far as now, we don't have, and I wish we did, but we don't have data yet on long-term mental health, right? So we have some data from, like I mentioned before, about the physical injuries. So athletes that have specialized now later in college, they are more likely to have injuries and more likely to have surgery. We don't really have that data so much for mental health that I know of, okay? So we don't know if early specialization and mental health that may occur during the playing time, if that transfers to later in life, right? 20s, 30s, et cetera, okay? Mm-hmm. So we don't really know that per se. One thing, had another thought on mental health is, I just lost my train of thought. What it was, maybe I'll come back to it.
Okay.
And I feel this is very important as far as lifelong activity, lifelong participation in sports. And I've seen this, I've observed this as well. What we don't want is we don't want kids to burn out and then stop playing like ever again. Like I've seen this happen with certain sports where they decide their junior year, they don't want to do it anymore. And then never go back to it, right? Even, and they were very talented. So the withdrawal from the sport, and then I've seen also even later into the 20s, I've known kids from junior high all the way through their 20s and 30s that I've known for years now here, and they never went back to their sport or their activity or even general exercise. And that is really dangerous for lifelong health, in my opinion, right? So we have a person that early specialized, went into burnout, overreaching, overtraining, decided they didn't want to do the sport anymore, and then it affected the course of their life as far as their physical activity and their exercise.
Yeah, I've
seen that numerous times.
Yeah, and I'm probably, you know, one that, you know, my I had my oldest son who played, you know, all the way through high school, and then not playing a sport anymore. I was playing golf, but not the sport he did.
Golf's not a sport.
Look at that. It's like you get that joke all the time, right? It is an activity, right? It's an activity, right? If you can drink while you're doing it, it's not a sport. I totally get it.
Golf is a skill beyond.
Yeah, it's a skill, yeah. But when I look at, you mentioned something there, and it's, I've, up to now, I think, and this is, I'm talking about me, right?
Yeah.
I'm coming at this angle a lot as, parents. Now I want to come this on the angle, we're going to continue with mental health, but I don't talk about the kids, because a lot of times, the kid is the one that wants to do it all the time.
Sure.
That he's the one that he feels like he needs to, because, again, is it the social media? Is it all that? Now, it's the conversation, and it might be, it's like, as a parent, and this just like, how do we navigate this?
Yeah, I think this is where I think some of the psychologists and therapists can come in, and maybe they can help on the communication with students. I've had this experience. I've seen it. I've had conversations with parents, this exact conversation with parents, because they, obviously we live in a highly educated area, and parents can talk about these things in depth. I've had conversations with parents where they say they understand that this is not really ideal, that we really shouldn't have, our 13-year-old specializing. They understand it, but they succumb to, the kids.
Yeah.
That's what they want to do, and that's what they want to do. I think this is the this is one of the issues of parenting and communication and trying to, communicate with your child and come up with a family decision. Branding identity culture right now. And I think that's trickling down into some of these things where this is what my identity is. This is what I want to do. And again, we look at the overall pressures from college. So I don't know if it's social media. I'm sure social media is part of it. But somehow we have a society where we see, every athlete, on TV or social media, et cetera, and they have their own logo with their letters. Tiger Woods started that.
Their branding,
they are their brand, and that is being taught not only in business but in school and influencer society, where it's like you are your brand, right? So you are your business. You're your own business. Yeah. So sports has become a business now, down to the junior high level, right? There's 8th and 9th graders getting nil deals, right, in certain sports.
I know, it's crazy.
So listen, great. We live in America. Go ahead and make your money.
Yeah,
but again, understand the trade-offs.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, go back to, I don't know if for most student athletes, the trade-off may not be worth it, because you may have gone to college anyway.
Yeah.
Without the specialization, because you're that good, or maybe you're not that good, and that's a whole nother, we get into a whole nother topic of parenting, parents and coaches being honest. So there's one of my favorite books from years past is called Leadership is an Art, Max Dupree, Leadership is an Art. And in that he said, what is the main objective, the primary objective of the leader? And the primary objective of a leader is to define reality. And I find that sometimes parents, or coaches for their own.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Other benefits. Maybe we're not being honest with the actual talent level of the student athlete. I gave you another anecdote. Okay. Again, not all negative, just sharing information.
Right. We want people. Right.
So I remember one parent I was talking to, parent of a football player, maybe 10 years ago. And, not at Staples,
you're right.
Quarterback from another school. And there was some, he wasn't doing so well, got injured and something. I said, well, it's not like he's going to the NFL.
Oh man.
Well, I mean, it was obvious. I mean, right. Alabama was not knocking down his door. Right. Right. UConn was not knocking down his door. If you know, you would
think it was obvious.
You'd know by now. And this mother shot me a look, like, oh, well, I'm not going to crush his dream. Okay, the dream is not real, not reality. Right. We have to have SMART goals. Right. Everyone, we should know SMART goals. Right. SMART goals are, you know, one of them is realistic. We have to have realistic goals. So I think we need to define reality. Right. And define what really our true goal is for this student athlete and what the real availabilities and opportunities are. Once we do that, then we can make a decision and say, okay, this is an avenue for you, or this really isn't, but let's not make this a job. Okay, that's another concept is, what about the student athletes who just enjoy playing, who just enjoy competition, who just want to be on a team because it is part of the culture of being in high school.
Camaraderie and everything.
Camaraderie, yeah. Travel. It's a beautiful thing. And that's what we all grew up on. That's, I think, being lost, because now if you don't have a path toward college, you know, we don't want coaches to not pay attention to you, right? Because it's still, this is a team atmosphere. This is a high school atmosphere. It's supposed to be a good team building, value building, character building mode of, you know, athletics to attain those skills. So I think that's also being lost, because now we're resume building. We're just resume building from seventh grade, right? Which is the culture we live in, but it doesn't have to be. If we get everybody on the same page, then we can kind of maybe temper that a bit.
Yeah, I'll share with you, and it's funny to talk about that line will stick with me, leadership is about defining reality. So I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I grew up in Brazil, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
Every Brazilian wants to be a soccer player, right?
Yeah,
so you do. So when I was, and I left Brazil when I was 12, but when I was 11, I used to play at this, it was a local club, but it was a extension of a Brazilian club called Palmeiras, right? And it wasn't any deal, because you could just, you know, go to training. And the difference was at that time, you know, and we talked about the monetization of sports, right? So in Brazil, it's a coach where, like, you really can't pay your way into a team. You either play or you don't play.
Yeah,
right. I mean, there's no way, because
this club meritocracy.
Right, right. Because like you're sponsored by professional teams, so who cares, right? So, I remember that I, you know, they had me trying for a week, whatever it was, and then the guy and then the coach. I wish I remember his name. He set my dad and myself down. He said, "Listen, I'm gonna give you guys straight." He goes, "Your son's not big enough to be a defender. He's not fast enough to be a forward. He should be doing something else."
and
that was 11 years old.
Right.
But the point is. Well, that stuck with me to the point, like, and he was completely correct in his assessment,
yeah.
Right? Because I was at 11. You said you can see the special athletes at a very early age, right? They were taller than everybody. They were faster than everyone. Right. You could tell.
Yeah, we're on the bell curve somewhere.
Right, right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so yeah. It's like, it just was, so if I went down that path of just keep knocking on the door, like I said, maybe I was like on that little cusp that could have done something if I just special or whatever. But at the end of the day, maybe it was like, I mean, it allowed me to get into music and so what other stuff that I really wanted to do.
Right.
And it's like, it just really changed. I mean, and I have found my place.
Right, right, right. So, but did you still enjoy playing soccer?
Oh, yeah. I played.
I still play.
I play, yeah, I play a bunch of rec leagues, you know. Yeah. I played old man soccer. I still play old man soccer, which, you know, it's all about the after game, you know, how it goes. But, you know, we were on the basketball league together. So you're still doing things, right?
Yeah. You're still competing. There's something about competition that we need.
Right. Right? You either like or don't. But the point is the reality of it, right?
Yeah.
And you said about, you know, not being in the NFL. Like, I remember years ago, I was in the rec league, you know, one of the directors of the rec league. And then I made the comment on a meeting of parents, and I didn't know how bad I come, but I just said, you know, listen, no one in this league is going professional. And like, it was like I had shot somebody, 100%. Right? Right?
Yeah.
But I thought that was kind of an obvious thing. If you're a 15-year-old playing a rec league, you know, but again.
I don't disagree.
Right,
I agree.
But it doesn't mean that he's in is lesser than anybody else. It just means that, you know, it's like he's still there doing the competition, but there's a lot of things that different they can do. And in the mental health of it, it's so important because, like you said, you get in that competition, but it's not, you know, overwhelming or pressurized because you're just doing it for the fun.
Right. And also, well, I think that's developed. We developed this almost like this stratification, this caste system of, okay, you're going to play rec because, you know, you don't have a college, you know, avenue, right? So you're relegated to rec, right? And I don't necessarily think I don't really think that's the greatest message to send as well either, right? Because then again, it's a business, okay? The varsity program becomes a business of trying to get kids through school rather than just developing this cohesive, you know, cliche, maybe cheesy school spirit kind of competition and just being part of a team and part of the camaraderie. I think that depends on the size of the team. I think it's easier for football to do that than basketball, right? Because there's less players, right? So I guess it could be sports specific, right?
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, and I think school spirit to me is a big deal. I mean, listen, Prep Zone lives on the staple school spirit, right?
Yeah.
Because how much people care and how much people do it. So it's like my whole scenario about this, and it's just about, I've always been about the kids, right? And are we doing it? It's like, so we want to make sure, and that's why I mentioned kids, because we tend to, and again, talking about me, you tend to think that this is all driven by parents, and so maybe sometimes it isn't, but not all times, right? It's because like I always think about the pressure too with like the social media, and I think I was talking to someone and I asked them about social media, and they said, well, social media is someone's highlights,
mm-hmm.
right? Oh, it's sure. like it's like
somebody's life highlights,
right? Yeah, but it's like that doesn't happen every day,
yeah.
Right? I one time I was talking to a buddy. He goes, I want to, you know, you have Facebook. He goes, I want to come up with misery book. You know, we talk about all the bad stuff. You know, I want to, But you know, it was a joke. But at the same time, like we let ourselves be, and then it affects our mental health to a great degree. Yeah.
I just think some of this is just transformed into the culture. I don't think it's any one group or person's fault. Like the student athletes, this has become, again, I believe it's just an identity kind of branding type of a trickle down effect. I think the only real, and I don't think this is realistic at all, but the only solution out of, you know, stressing early sports specialization is get everybody on board. That's all the stakeholders, from the coaches to the administrators to the parents. But I don't think that's going to happen because, again, I think we've passed the tipping point. But so what we can do is like this, educate on the risks of, again, early, right? A mature sophomore, fine. Junior year, fine. But seventh and eighth graders should not be specializing. Sixth graders should not be specializing. Okay. The data is so strong and nothing has refuted it. And we want to develop, you know, you want to develop, we can say this, we want to develop the athlete first before you develop the specialist, right? Mm. So overall, so I've seen, let's say a baseball player, good pitcher, can throw, can't skip, can't jump, can't really run that well, but they're a great pitcher. That's not really ideal, right? That's not the ideal, right? Because we want to develop people. We'd want to develop lifelong skills. I teach neurology, I take care of a lot of neurological patients. There are distinct advantages through childhood, exposing them to different movement patterns, different sports, different events, activities, particularly movement. It literally changes the brain. So the brain of a baseball player is different than the brain of a volleyball player. The brain of a 100-meter sprinter is different than the brain of a pole vaulter, right? Just because of the different repetition patterns. But as a child, 9, 10, 11 years old, the brain obviously is malleable throughout our whole life, but particularly at childhood, the multiple movement patterns that one would get from participating in different activities has far-reaching effects in life, 30s, 40s, 50s. So there's many patients I take care of in their 40s and 50s, and we can do rehab exercises and things. I mean, the people that had a lot of experience with movement patterns in the past, athletes, you know, they just move better than people that hadn't been exposed to those things, right? You follow?
No, I totally do. Because as you were talking about it, as I get a little, into my late 40s here, I think about how, you hear a lot more about, as you do your exercise, everything should be balanced, right? Shouldn't do just cardio, should do some weights, should do all that stuff. And I guess that goes in from an early age all the way to the end.
Yeah, definitely. The, humans, we're top of the food chain. We have the best of everything. We can run long distance, almost better than any animal on the planet, except dogs, right? So dogs and are a little bit better. But we're probably right there. But so we can have strength, we have endurance, we can use our brain, right? So yeah, these skills developing at the youth level have far-reaching effects for not only decreased pain later in life, increased movement ability, increased likelihood of participating in sport later. Again, but if there's a threshold there, right? Once we get into a certain threshold of doing too much, then we get into some mental health components, and then we see the opposite occur in a certain percentage of people.
Yeah. Listen, we could go on here for hours, but I feel like this is not going to be our last time. Hopefully you're willing to come back and talk more about this.
Well,
because
we don't get too much hate mail.
No, listen, I think, and we were chatting a little bit before, I said, what I love about this is that, you know, I'm always surprised about how much people listen, right? And how much they do actually take our content. Like, you know, you tell stories. I had a story with, you know, I woke up to a text at 6:30 2 days ago about, you know, a stat I had missed from a game, you know, which to me is so great.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people don't, that means that people are actually reading and they
That's
care
true.
About it,
That's
right?
True.
They care
That's
about
true.
It.
Yeah.
So it's like, that means what we're doing is important.
Yeah.
Right, that means that people are there.
They took the time to reach out, and they care.
Exactly, yeah. They care. So it's like, I always look at it's like, indifference is the worst thing in the world. Mm. So if you have people who are out there and they're listening and they're reacting, and I really hope, like the idea of, you know, it's so great that we had this conversation, because I want the kids. It's always about the kids, and it's like, Can we, like you said, educate? And your word was perfect. You said educating, right? Because I think it's about education. We can't make a decision for anyone, mm-hmm. but we can let them know the consequences of their decisions.
Well said. Yeah.
Right. And I think that's the whole point.
Well said. Excellent.
Yeah. Dr. Lander, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I think what you're doing is great.
I appreciate it.
I'm in awe. You're just, every time I look, it's like, how is he at this game and then also at this game? So it's you're spreading positive vibes through the community, and like you said, you're helping a lot of kids. So.
Yeah, and we want to help the kids, want to help the parents, right? Because I think it's freaking help the family. That's what we're going to get to.
Yeah.
I really hope that this is only just the first of many, because I so appreciate your time. I know we're recording it late at night after 4 days of work you had, so I really appreciate that. I have a feeling that we're going to get some feedback from this, and you know, we'll hopefully
both positive and negative.
Yeah, I think that we got to open some eyes.
Yeah,
we got to open some eyes. You know,
it's not the biggest problem in the world right now, but it is a concern.
It's a concern because I always feel like, you know, when you, and again, nobody's doing this intentionally, right? I think like all parents have the best, like I did, the 100%. Best intentions in the world.
100%.
You want to give your kid the best,
best opportunity.
So and I know it's like, we'll invest all this money and all this time in this one sport because we think that that's right. What it is. And again, it may not
be actually the advantage that people think it is.
It is. Listen,
at least not enough for the trade-off.
I'm going to go back and get so many sound bites from this because you're giving me so much stuff. But the book about the leadership, I want to get into that. I think that's a really good one. What was the name of the book again?
Leadership is an Art.
I want to do that.
Yeah. It's a short little paperback.
I know.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm gonna start researching about how did I turn into someone who cut it. That was a great line. I mean, again, but these are thought-provoking ideas. Yeah, and I love
that
kind of stuff.
That's all we want.
That's all you want.
All we want
people to stop, think, and do I need to make a change? Or, you know, and I always think it's never too late, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I know we got to go. One last thing.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
If someone, like I say, they've been on that, it's not too late to change, right?
No. Not at all. Not at all.
Because again, you can still.
Yes. But again, now it's up to the student. It's up to the child.
Because they're at that point. Yeah, they're like.
So, no, it's not too late to change. It's just, again, we get into communication styles. And again, I know we're wrapping up here, but the communication, parent to child communication, and again, maybe this is where the psychotherapist can come in and help. But I think how we frame language, how we discuss these topics is really, really, really important as far as how it's received. that we didn't even talk about, like communication after a game, right, and things like that, the specifics of mentality, like after a game, you know, don't critique right after the game, the kind of philosophies. And, you know, so my fiance has just one thing she always says. She says, Marisol says, I love watching you play. That's what she says every time. And it's, there's no critique right away. There's no, why did you do this? Why didn't you do this? And you could have done this better. It's just, I love watching you play. And then there's time for the critique later.
Yeah.
So I'll end with that.
Yeah. And that's amazing, because my line is always, did you have fun?
Yeah.
Right? That's kind of the same line.
100%.
Have fun.
Yeah.
And then I want to leave everyone with a teaser here for next time, is that, is there specific training to maybe not reverse, but to maybe undo some of that stress is being put in by sports specialization.
Mm. Okay. Well, maybe we'll come back and tackle that next time.
We'll talk about that next time. Yeah.
Thank you.
Dr. Leonard, thank you so much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.